into positions of responsibility, and has in fact really, by paternalism and by general stereotyped attitudes of Indian confidence and so forth, and reasons of color, have kept Indians down within the organization. So currently there are two suits being filed. There should be over the year perhaps 10 to 15. We think we've already have some success so far in that a number of agency directors have called in a list of all their Indians and tried to promote as many as possible. Maybe even in terms of dollars, maybe $100,000, $150,000 have been pumped into Indian people on these promotions if they had a fear of having suits, and there will be more suits to come. We're engaged in, various of the students are engaged in different kinds of smaller projects over the country, from language courses, civics courses. During the summer, we run a summer program. Last year, we ran it for 150 college students, hoping to lead towards some kind of really Indian education, because these were institutes run by students, and the curriculum was in large measure developed by the students. And we're looking forward to having another one next summer, perhaps expanding on the program. Then we've considered setting up a company to market Indian arts and crafts, an outlet somewhere in the east, and we should have that very soon. There are a number of local issues that are going on around the country, and we try to get involved in those, involved with various people on reservations and different kinds of things.
You began by saying that when you started, there wasn't any such thing as Indian youth. Is there now an Indian youth movement? I think there's a remarkable percentage of the Indians in this state are under 25. Isn't it something like 70%?
I think one of the attitudes of the Bureau is to, in order to show that they're doing a good job and that Indians are getting into mainstream and everything, is to try to create a generation gap in the Indian community. I don't think this is a particularly healthy kind of attitude. And there is a generation gap in the Indian community, I suppose, but it's nowhere near the proportions that exist in the rest of the society.
Well, do you, this is for both of you, do young Indians tend to be more militant, and is there a growing militancy among young Indians? And how will this affect Indian affairs?
Well, I think the Indians have been militant for a long time, and because they don't adopt the culture of current militancy, there's no way indication that they're not active and concerned about doing something about the problem. It's not as visible in Indian, we don't call it militancy or whatever, as other groups might be, but there's still a vast movement for change on the part of all Indians. And I think it takes on Indian characteristics and it's done in an Indian way, which is the most effective way to deal with your own people.
I've heard that there are, well, some specific incidents where schools that have been run by the BIA have not allowed the Indian children going to these schools to speak their own language. Is this a prevalent sort of thing?
Yes, there are a number of problems like that. There is this prejudice against Indians speaking their own language. Many kids are called down for that. Some schools won't allow anything Indian to be in the dormitories or classrooms or so forth. You have an art class where don't encourage Indians to do Indian art. And also there's a question of separation of church and state in Indian schools, whereas an Indian kid is practically forced to choose a religion, Protestant, Catholic, or Mormon when he goes to school. There's a religious coordinator paid by the state to make sure this happens. Often this results in the kid ending up with a religion different from his parents, especially if his parents belong to the Native American church or practices a Native religion. So that this kind of people, that's not necessarily, this kind of system isn't producing the kind of person that can come to terms with himself or with his community and really be an effective person.
Do you want to continue? Can we run this tape some more?
That's a situation we'll just have to contend with, I guess. Who, where does it seem to be coming from?
Talk about, I'm sure there must be.
Well, a number of, there are a great number in different places. The Pyramid Lake question still isn't settled. And there, though, it's, we talked about just question of water rights. Land is useless without water, sustaining rights. It's virtually the end of the Paiutes if the present direction of Pyramid Lake continues.
Who stands to profit from the Pyramid Lake thing?
Everybody else in both states who needs the water. There are a couple of dam projects, going power projects. It's been diverted for the last 60 years,
mm-hmm.
But now it's being diverted even further. And it really comes down to, I think, water rights question in the state of New Mexico has to do with the rights to the Rio Grande. And what that will come down to, probably politically, would be the growth of Albuquerque versus a living community for the Pueblos, for the Rio Grande Pueblos, and as basic as that. And who's going to stand where in relation to that when that comes to a head?
Are we going?
To get to okay. Pluralistic society versus an integrated?
No, not really. We haven't discussed that. Might you phrase the question?
Are we
Yeah, we're on.
Oh.
We're on.
Oh, we're on.
Yeah, we're wasting more time. We're going to piece something together.
Oh, I know what I was going to ask. Let me get the questions together here. Okay. The war against poverty, such as it is, has tended to categorize the problems, and they are usually talked of in terms of education, housing, and employment. Is there one need among Indians that's greater than any others, and are those three categories appropriate for Indian problems?
I don't think you can isolate it to one, because they're all interrelated. If a person has a job, he can afford a house, or at least afford to maintain it. If he's got a house, this naturally affects his family and area of education, you know. So, if anything, it might be a job.
Myron, do you feel the same way?
Well, no, I would add to that in a way that the problems of maintaining land, rights to the land, ability to use that land, the water that goes with it, are critical, and our Indian questions are not questions for other groups within the war against poverty.
Gerald?
I think Myron's fit very well.
Speaking of other minorities, I suppose we're really talking about blacks. Can Indians...
We have to change things. What's your question?
The question I'm going to ask is, can Indians assume some of the...
Go.
Can Indians take on some of the same methods used by the blacks in their struggle? Is the black movement and the Indian struggle analogous at all? Could there ever be such a thing as an Indian equivalent of the Black Panther Party, for instance?
It's so difficult to imagine. There's a group in Milwaukee, which an Indian group which patrols the police.
Minneapolis.
Mm-hmm. Check out the police to be sure that the police behave themselves. In relation to Indians,
have there been difficulties in this area of police harassing Indians in places like Milwaukee and
Gallup?
The NIYC paper, great piece on Gallup.
Yeah.
You should devote a primary to Gallup. I think you'll have to drive through Gallup to see what's going on.
What is going on in Gallup?
That's Pyramid City.
Oh, well, it's a general situation of. A town that that whose economic life is totally tied to the Indians, and yet Indians have very little to say about what happens to them there. And I think the very problem of police brutality, there's a problem of inadequate jail conditions, there's a problem of alcoholism, and there's a problem of Indians being exploited in the Gallup ceremonial. And this is a problem where Indians are in kind of a twilight zone there, in a place that has a hostile attitude towards Indians and yet makes a living from them, and then the tribal, the reservation where they come from, and both the tribe and the city kind of disclaim jurisdiction over the problems that Indians have in Gallup. So Indians are caught in that kind of situation. Also, I think it's kind of a classic situation, you know, of something that in most places was done away with many years ago. One of the things that happens, though, in a sense, it's not really Gallup. Perhaps Gallup is just a lot of small towns in Oklahoma are really big, because you can go by in small towns in Oklahoma and see Indians. In the bars that most Indians frequent, you see the wagon just pulled up and people loaded in. You can see that in Los Angeles. You can see all kinds of crimes of whites committing against Indians that somehow don't get taken care of as far as justice goes. You see this is something which is all over, you know, and. There are many specific instances in which the National Youth Council has become involved, you know. And I don't know what the attitude. One of the things is it doesn't make much difference, really, what people in Los Angeles and so forth think of Indians. No real difference. What's really important is the way the people in Gallup and various small places in Oklahoma and Mississippi, North Dakota. But those local people think of Indians. And these local people certainly don't have the idea of the noble savage, or the idea of this drunken, brown bum.
Well, I guess we're now talking about human rights, and I think relates to the question I asked before and didn't really get an answer to. Can Indians take on some of the tactics of the blacks in their movements? And, is there a need to radicalize, for instance, Indians in order to make some sort of progress?
Well, I don't think. I mean, you've got to be able to explain this thing to people, you know. And probably people in Indian communities don't understand what black power is. Or don't really understand what the blacks are up to. I think that there's this pull to get the good things in life, and a pull to remain separate, you know. And I think the situation is somewhat different in that Indians are trying.